Welcome to the second official interview of the Elizabeth Speaks podcast. Our special guest is Nick Ott. He is a friend of mine. I met Nick almost 2 years ago now while we were training. Isn't that something?
2 years. No. Hooray!
Yep. And Nick and I have a lot of things in common. And one of the things that Nick and I have in common is we both have a child that has some learning disabilities. And
yeah.
Wonderful things that come of it, because these are as... Do you remember last week when we talked with T-Bones Martinez? What did his mom say? These are not disabilities. Yeah. These are abilities.
Yes.
So we've got great questions that Elizabeth and I came up with, but Elizabeth's going to do all the questions. I'm here kind of just like as her backup quarterback if she needs any help.
You need the slide.
I'm going to share the screen, and Elizabeth's going to ask the questions, and then we're hoping to have this successfully go on to the YouTube channel and then Spotify. Can everybody see the screen? Nick, are you good to see the screen?
I can see the screen, yes.
Okay. So let's give Nick a minute to introduce himself. Nick, give us a quick overview of what you want the audience to know about you, your 9-to-5 job, your side business, anything you want the audience to know.
Sure. So I'm Nick Ott. I have my life coaching business, which is called The Parent Mentor, kind of based on some of the things that we're going to talk about today, but also just three adult children, as well as my son that we're going to discuss today. And my day job is that I help people with some medical coding software. So this is really kind of the thing that I love to do. It has more meaning for me. And so I'm excited to be here. And thank you guys for including me. I love your channel, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
You're always inspiring and awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She also has a separate channel where on TikTok, where I don't know if you've seen that, where she just talks about her movie collection. So that's not at all like, helping the world. But
it's not.
She has a ton of followers on that one, too. It cracks me up. Okay, Elizabeth, I'm ready for you to go. I'm just here, like I said, if you need any help, but go ahead.
Do you have me the first one?
No, you got it.
Okay, can you describe the moment you learned
about
your son who is autistic and have...
Fetal alcohol syndrome diagnosis.
How do you process the news?
Yeah, so my son is adopted. He was my sister's son first, biologically. So he's my nephew, but legally now I'm his dad. And he was removed from her care. And as part of the sort of recovery from that, one of the things that they do in the foster system is they check kids for different kinds of diagnoses that they might have. And so I'd never heard of fetal alcohol syndrome before. And when they said that he had it, it was a little bit surprising because my sister was not a drinker, but she didn't know she was pregnant for a really long time. She was, 41, I think, at the time. She wasn't planning on getting pregnant. It was sort of a surprise. So I think what happened is that she just didn't realize she was pregnant. And this is something that actually happens to a lot of parents. They don't realize that they're, that they're already growing a body in there. And so they don't realize that they shouldn't be drinking. And a lot of people think that fetal alcohol syndrome comes from being, really drinking, like heavily. And that's not actually the case. It's more about what part of the development alcohol gets introduced. So it was a big learning curve, I guess is the way to say it. There was a lot of information that I had to process and absorb. And because it is a spectrum, the diagnosis is kind of on a spectrum, like so many things, right? It really depends on how, you don't really know how affected the child's going to be until they grow older. So the brain is pretty impressive. So it does a lot of different things and it can rewire itself, which is exciting. So you never really know what their full capabilities are going to be until they're fully grown. So it's a constant learning process.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So our next question, what is your emotion do you feel during the first time news of your son's diagnosis?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of feelings. I think there's a lot of overwhelm. It was a lot of information to try to process at once and understand what that might look like. There was a lot of uncertainty about how much is this going to affect his future. I would say maybe a little fear, you know, not knowing what is it going to be like to raise him. What struggles are we maybe going to have? And then there's always kind of a bit of sadness because you know that your child's going to experience the world in a different way. And not all people in the world are nice, kind, supportive, loving people. And that can be, you know, really sad. As a parent, you love your kid. You want your kid to have the best and be treated well. And, you know, I think probably, Elizabeth, you've had some of those experiences where people don't always treat you well. And that, you know, breaks a parent's heart.
Yeah, I kind of do.
It can be difficult, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, my dog's barking at like nothing.
He okay. wants to play.
That's right.
Yeah, a god everywhere. Okay, here's the next question. Can you explain what fetal alcohol syndrome and how it impact your son development?
Yeah. So kind of on top of what I said, it affects mostly the brain. And the parts of the brain that it affects are kind of the frontal lobe, which is your executive functioning center. And that's really the part that makes it so that you can make decisions and understand cause and effect. It also affects impulse control. Some of the other things that sort of happened that caused him to be removed from my sister's care in the first place also affected his development. So he's a little bit delayed because of that as well. But mostly, you know, when kids go to school, they can sit and listen and learn. And with him, he has ADHD as well as fetal alcohol syndrome, as well as autism. So that's, you know, a lot of things all at once. So he has a lot of energy, a hard time focusing, and those things slow down your development as well.
Okay, what are your qualities?
Unique
challenge with raising a child with
FASD.
FASD beyond those of autism.
Yeah, so a lot of it is with FASD is that, you know, kids have to hear things a large number of times before they remember them, right? That's kind of normal process of learning. With FASD, they have to learn them, they have to hear them a whole lot more times, first of all, so there's a lot more repetition required. Secondly, because their brain is changing all the time, it's constantly trying to find a way to hold the information, so it'll actually adjust, and you can lose information when it does that, so it kind of rewires itself. So what'll happen is sometimes a kid will, it'll seem like they really understand something, right? They get it, they can repeat it multiple times, seems like they're good. And then literally the next day, you can ask them the same question that they answered perfectly and have been answering perfectly for weeks, and they don't actually know it. And it's hard to tell what do they know versus what do they maybe just don't want to answer. Or they, you know, kind of want to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Really, what's the truth, really? Like, do they actually know it? Are they actually capable? Are they willing, right? There's all these little pieces that you have to kind of be a detective to figure out. And so those can be really challenging, not just for me, but also for, you know, his teachers and probably people in his life in other, you know, roles as well.
Wow. We're so grateful, first of all, Nick, for just you, you know, having, like we said, the transparency and honesty to kind of share this. Yeah. Because a lot of things we didn't really know about, right?
Yeah.
I know it.
I have two people I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. As a life coach, you help other navigation life challenges.
How has
your personal experience with your son influenced your approach approaching to coaching?
Yeah, I'd say that all of my children have affected the way that I coach. You know, they all are really different and they have different challenges. And the ways that they kind of see things is different. The ways that they handle situations are really different. And so I think it's taught me a lot of patience. It's taught me to kind of listen more to what is happening and look for the underlying sort of reasoning. So instead of, you know, okay, well, the kid's freaking out and they're angry and they don't want to brush their teeth and they've thrown themselves on the floor, you know, is it that they're just refusing to do what they're told, or is it more of an emotional response to other things that have like built up right over time? So most things end up being kind of emotional coping skills that are missing. So it's given me definitely more perspective, I think. And also kids that are different, they broaden your idea of what people are capable of, you know. They inspire you. He inspires me every day. He's extremely funny. He sees things differently. So when he says stuff, it can come across really funny. And he's happy. You know, he's happy. He's joyful. He laughs a lot. He dances, you know, anywhere, everywhere, unless I tell him he has to, and then he pretends he doesn't know how. He just does things differently, and it helps me stop and just think about what's really important. What's important to my relationship with him, what's important to fight over or not, you know, where, and it helps me learn some balance around where do I stop helping? Where do I help because it's easier for me and not for him, right? So it's given me a lot of influence, and the way that I approach coaching is just that there's no one way to raise a child, and that, you know, I believe that each child finds the parent they're supposed to be with, and that, you know, that's the person, those are the person or people that are supposed to take care of them, and they know what to do, and it's just, you know, being the best self that they can be to get there. And so I like working with parents who, you know, they all want the best for their kids, and they're struggling, and they, you know, maybe need some direction. But the direction that I give is not do what I do. It's how do you want to show up? What things matter to you and your family? Where are you experiencing difficulty? And how can we release that difficulty for you and for your kid, and make it so that you guys have a really strong, supportive, beautiful relationship, and get the things done that need to get done as well, right?
Love that.
Yeah, love that. All right. What is your long-term hope and dreams for your son, future in both
personally and professionally?
You know, it's hard to say, and I think that you can let fear kind of take over and be worried about, you know, are they going to be able to live independently? You know, are they going to, a lot of FASD kids end up in the foster care system. And I think that's because that's where they test them for it. So there's a higher percentage in that group. But they also often end up in jail a lot. And so that's a fear that I have, because they can't control their impulses. So, you know, that's something that I'm always kind of worried about. But really what I hope for him is that he, you know, personally, that he finds meaning in his life, that he has enough independence to feel like it's his life and he's in charge of it, that he, you know, knows how to keep himself safe, that, he, you know, while he'll make mistakes like we all do, that they won't be mistakes that take away the rest of his future, you know. And professionally, I don't know if he'll be able to, you know, work a full-time job. I don't know if he'll, you know, he probably won't go to college or do anything kind of in that extra education wise. But, you know, I think you can be really happy in a job that brings you joy. It doesn't have to be, you know, a job that brings in millions of dollars, you know? So I just want him to be happy, and hopefully I'd like for him to find love as well, because I think relationships are really important.
Ooh, that's good. I want a relationship.
Yeah.
Still 25, no relationship.
I mean, there's still plenty of time, Elizabeth.
Yeah. Mine too.
56
yeah,
in a relationship.
56 in a relationship.
Yeah, me too. We're all in the same boat.
There you go.
Okay, can you walk us through a time of day in your household? Tell us the unique routines and strength you have to you manage your son's needs.
Sure. So Ryan wakes up early, and I usually know that he's up because he has a real thing for impact. So he likes to smack his bed or smack the walls. It could also be considered like stimming for autism, but for FASD, it's usually an impact need. So they need compression or, you know, loud. He doesn't like it when other people make loud noises, but he likes to make loud noises. So that can be a fun way to wake up. Yeah, so for me, he's great. He's happy. He usually wakes up happy, laughing, smacking the wall. So then I know he's up. And then, but then he wants to stay in bed for as long as he possibly can. So I get up and get my stuff going and keep reminding him he needs to get up. And then he usually has cereal or waffles for breakfast. And he gets himself dressed, however long that tends to take. Usually there's a lot of dancing and singing and throwing things around the room in his room, but it's all out of fun. And he puts his shoes on and he does all of that. And then, I take him to, he goes to a daycare in the morning. It's a normal daycare. And then he goes over to the middle school that's right next door. And, they manage him all day long. And he gets to do lots of walks to get his energy out. And he's building a Lego car, that's going to have a motor. He's doing this STEM class that he's really excited about. So that's awesome. I work while he's doing all that. And then he goes back to the daycare after, gets to play with his friends. They do lots of activities and crafts and things. They just love him there and he loves being there. And then I go pick him up after I'm done with my work stuff. We come home. Sometimes, depending on the day, he does gymnastics, which he really enjoys and has actually gotten him to be a lot more coordinated and better at balance. Or like today we had swimming. He just finished a swimming program where he swims better than I do. He can do all four. I guess there's four different strokes that you can do in swimming. So he knows how to do all of those. So today he had like a safety check. So he got to wear all of his clothes and his shoes and jump in the pool and have to prove that he could still swim and not drown.
Wow.
And he loved it. He loved it. He was so excited. So that was fun. And then, we come home and have some dinner, usually chicken nuggets.
The universal kid meal. Uh-huh.
I've had chicken nuggets sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, they're good, right? Yes, chicken nuggets, and sometimes he'll have some pasta, or very rarely will he have a vegetable, so I usually have him drink carrot juice. He'll drink carrot juice if I mix it with orange juice. So that's one of the things that we kind of figured out together and collaborated on to get him some kind of vegetable. And then it's time to potty pull-up PJs, as we call it. So he still has to wear a pull-up at night, which is fine. And then, brush his teeth, and I read to him, and then he goes to bed. And then he's usually in there talking to himself, singing, talking to the Alexa, banging on the wall for 30, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour, and then it'll get silent, and I'll know that he finally fell asleep.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I can relax, right?
That's right.
How do you navigate sensory? I don't know.
Sensitivities. I gave you big words.
Yeah,
for
you
this gave
me big words, but yeah.
That's okay. That's why we have it on the screen.
Sensitivity, both at home and
in public
settings.
I learned a long time ago that often the response that I would have when I would get like frustrated or angry when we were out in public, and any of my kids, this happened with my older kids first, right, obviously. And I would get upset because they'd be acting crazy, or they'd get upset, or they would, throw a fit about a toy they wanted that I said no to. And it's, excuse me.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Thank you. It's about managing your own feelings of being inadequate or being embarrassed. And so it's really about, you know, it doesn't bother me what he does. He does what he does. We don't use like hand dryers. They're really loud. You know, the ones where you push the button and it comes on.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a lot of autistic kids can't handle that either. He doesn't have any issues with like lights, but I know some kids do. He has glasses that go dark, you know, outside. So that way that kind of helps. He always has headphones with him that he can put on that kind of cancel out some of the noise. Cause he does have issues when it's too loud. He likes to wear, I found these really cool sensory vests that are weighted. So it kind of squeezes them. And then it has, I think it's 5 pounds or 8 pounds or something like that. So that makes him feel like, he says, the way he described it is, it's like you're hugging me all day long.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, if that doesn't make you want to put it on, right? I'm like, I'm just going to hug you. I'm just going to carry you around. Yeah. So those are the things that he kind of, you know, we use to sort of manage whatever's going on there for him.
That's pretty great. I did not know that, Nick. That's really cool.
No, okay.
He has a weighted blanket at night, too, which helps him just kind of chill out.
I like those weighted blankets, actually. Have you ever had one?
One time, yeah, in school, yeah.
They're nice, huh? They help you calm down pretty quick.
Yeah.
When she was at Miriam's school during elementary years, what did you have? They used to do, like, squeezing therapy. They'd wrap you like a burrito.
Yeah, burrito, a big ball, squish me back.
Yeah. Those things are cool. They have, at his gymnastics, they have one of those, like, silk swing things.
Oh.
And he loves that thing. They, like, get in it, and you can, like, wrap them into it, and it's like a little cocoon. And then they swing it. And he goes, you know, they have a lot of room there. So he just, like, flies through the air. You can hear him laughing.
Oh, that's awesome.
He asked me if I could put one in the house. I was like, we don't have
enough room.
We're talking about a warehouse that they have this thing in. And I'm like, this is not going to get the same effect, buddy.
You'll have holes in the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jumping off the walls. Slamming into them, yeah.
Can you share the type of medical appointment your son has and how those impact your family's schedule and well-being?
Yeah, so he doesn't have as many right now as he's had historically. So he used to go to a behavior analyst once a week for, I think it was an hour. And then he has a psychiatrist. He takes medications for, some of them are for autism. Some of them they're more like symptom-based. So, you know, he takes some to help with, he does have tics sometimes, so he takes some for that. He takes some that are mood balancers. He takes some Adderall version because he has pretty intense ADHD. So he has a pretty varied medicine routine that we keep track of pretty closely, and we're always trying to find ways that we can, you know, reduce what he's on, but still support him so that he feels like he has control over himself when he needs to focus and do things. You know, and I'm really lucky because my main job is work from home. Honestly, if I had a job where I had to be in person in an office every day, I wouldn't make it. I'd have lost my job multiple times by now. Because when he does have a hard time, sometimes even at school, they'll have to call me and I'll have to, you know, leave and go pick him up and come back. And then he's with me the rest of the day, which, you know, then that changes the whole dynamic of whatever I'm doing for work. So it's, it can be, you know, the appointments are really important. He has a really good support network. His pediatrician has been his pediatrician since he went into foster care. So since he was 5 months old. So he's very familiar with his doctors, which is important because he doesn't like change. So, like, we have a dentist that we go to that's amazing, excuse me, and he's been seeing them since he was, I think, a year old, 2 years old, something like that, and they're just fantastic people. They're, like, the only dentist I've ever been to where I'm never really in pain, and if I am in pain, they they stop and they find a way to make it so it doesn't hurt anymore, which I think is fantastic. But so that's where he goes. But he had to get a tooth pulled, and they don't have gas there for little kids. So we had to go to a different dentist, and, you know, it went okay. But it's really hard whenever there's any changes like that. So it's really important that they have a consistent team. So yeah, he's really lucky to have that where we are. But these are things that you think about as a parent, right? That if you have to change where you're taking your kid, it can be difficult. Actually, his psychiatrist left the large organization that she was with and went out on her own, and we just went with her because I knew that it would be harder to find someone new for him.
Right. Oh, boy, it's asking us, we're running out of time here. All right. Well, you know what we'll do? We'll go to...
How many do we have?
Let's do these... And then we'll probably have to wrap it up, and then we'll do like the... Let's go to this question.
Okay, yeah. What is the message of hope? We hope you're sharing like with other parents of children with autistic and FASD.
I think that, kind of like I said before, you know, different doesn't mean bad, right? They have such an interesting way of seeing the world, and they're all different. But they're sweet and loving, and, you know, yeah, there's an adjustment period that constantly is changing and shifting. But that's true with kids who don't have these things as well. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, find your people. Find the support networks that are near you or far but are online. I think knowing that you're not the only one going through something, being able to share what's worked for you, what's worked for others, is really helpful and powerful, because as kids change developmentally, even what worked before may not work anymore. So you're constantly looking for new ways to kind of solve either new problems or the same problems. And just know that, you know, even if they don't always say it, they are grateful. They do love you. They are happy that you're taking care of them. And, you know, they're amazing.
That's awesome. All right. Pick one of these two questions. Which one do you want to ask? The last one? Yeah, let's ask that one.
I think the last one is okay. My favorite, too. Oh, if man. You could have coffee with anyone historic, Vigo, who would you choose?
You know, I think, who would I choose? It's a really good question.
Oopsies.
By historical, do they have to be like, do they have to be dead? Or is it just anybody?
Anyone.
Either way. Okay.
Yeah.
I would love to have coffee with... Oh, there's so many people. That's the problem. Well, you know who I would like cut an arm off to have coffee with is Brene Brown.
She's a motivational speaker. She's amazing.
She's so good. She's a researcher. Mm. She does all this research on emotions, and it has been life changing for me and many other people. And she's just a really authentic, real person, and she's not afraid of being awkward. Her tag phrase is awkward, brave, and kind. I just love her. If you don't know about her, whoever's watching this, you should look her up, because she's amazing.
Agree. That's awesome. Okay, so Nick, while we close up, how can people find you? What's the best way for people to get a hold of you, especially if they want to maybe set up some time with you as a life coach? What's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
So they can call me. My number is 775-345-5949. You can email me. I don't know if we have a way to post it in, I guess when you post it, right?
I will. Yep.
We'll put my links in there for theparentmentor.com. And then I'm also on Instagram at theparentmentor. And I think I have a YouTube, but I haven't posted anything yet. So that'll be for later.
That's perfect. Yeah. We'll put it all out there. So if anybody's interested, they can get a hold of you. Well, I knew this was going to be wonderful because I know Nick, and I knew he would definitely give such great insight. Anything you want to wrap up and say before we close it out?
No, thank you, Nick. You are the second interviewing. We tried the first one, and then the third one coming in soon.
Coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm excited. Thank you for including me.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see the next one.
All right.
Yes. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye, bye everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Recording stopped.
All right. We did it.
Yeah, we did. We would have. We have.